Good morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sunup. The Daily Sunup podcast is a conversation with the Colorado Sun. See our trust indicators at coloradosun.com/ethics. It's Wednesday, May 22nd. Today, we're sharing a conversation between Colorado Sun politics reporter Jesse Paul and Governor Jared Polis that took place during our post-legislative session event last week at the University of Denver, sponsored by Aponte & Boosom Public Affairs Consultants. Before we continue, the Colorado Sun is partnering with multiple news outlets across the state to understand what is driving Coloradans this election year. What issues do you care about most as we head into the 2024 election? Let us know by filling out our survey at coloradosun.com/votervoices. Now, let's go back in time with some Colorado history. In May of 1861, surveyor Edward Berthoud and his team camped near Colorado's Grand River after traversing what is now known as Berthoud Pass. A Swiss native, Berthoud had earned a reputation for diligence in a number of railroad and land projects across America before settling in Golden. Inspired by rumors of a passable route through the Continental Divide, he led an expedition to survey this potential railroad corridor to connect Golden with Utah Territory. Despite his efforts, including service in the Civil War and contributions to the Colorado Central Railroad, Berthoud could not secure a viable rail crossing over the divide. Nevertheless, his legacy endures in the town bearing his name and a building at the Colorado School of Mines. Before we continue, join the Colorado Sun on June 25th as equity reporter Tatiana Flowers speaks with a panel about how they see mental illness falling through the cracks, what some solutions are or ways to address the issues, and more. The event is free and virtual. RSVP today at coloradosun.com/events. Next, our feature story.
And I want to start off with property taxes. The legislature in the final days of the session passed Senate Bill 233, which provides rate and value relief in perpetuity for Colorado homeowners and businesses. But it wasn't enough to stop conservative groups from pursuing their own ballot measures in the fall that would offer deeper cuts, bigger relief. And now Denver Chamber CEO J.J. Ament this week called on you to broker a better deal before November. So I guess my first question is there a better deal to be had? And would you be open to a special session, which would really be the only way to make that deal possible?
Well, first of all, thanks to Larry Rickman, Dean Fritz Mayer. Appreciate it, DU. Thank you for hosting this. And Jesse, good to see you. You know, this was amazing to see this work of the bipartisan commission. This was an idea. And, you know, this topic we could talk about for half an hour, Jesse, and you know this, and we'll try to do it in, I guess, 4 or 5 minutes because we want to talk about other things. But real quickly, how we got here, two things. The voters repealed the Gallagher Amendment. The Gallagher Amendment did one thing well, two things poorly. One thing it did well, kept home taxes down. Two things it did poorly, it jacked up prices for small businesses over time, and it would have gotten worse. And two, is it applied a Metro Denver formula on 4,000 special districts, the vast majority of which are rural, and had no impact. I mean, had no corresponding to the reality of like what they were actually facing tax-wise, because just because homes go up in Denver doesn't mean that homes go up in value in Julesburg. The second thing, that was one thing. The second thing was what I would call a unprecedented assessment period. We need a 2-year period, we assess homes every 2 years, where home values went up about 40% average statewide. So absent action, property taxes would go up 40%. Doesn't mean the rate went up. It means that your house is worth more. A $600,000 house might be worth $1 million, so people pay more. So we didn't think it was a good outcome. And when I say we, I mean Democrats, Republicans, most people with common sense, didn't think it was a good outcome that people should have to pay that full amount of their home value increasing. There's been a number of efforts to provide short-term relief. Three, and if I'm not mistaken, two of them were bipartisan and one wasn't. After HH failed, they came in, provided short-term relief. In fact, the main issue Republicans had with that at the time was this is not permanent, and Democrats agree, this wasn't permanent. Nobody was pretending it wasn't a Band-Aid. It was a Band-Aid. Everybody knew we had to provide a permanent way to provide relief, or rates would have gone up. What people paid would have gone up right away, because we did real quickly. We dropped the assessment rate we also let everybody deduct $50,000 from the value of their home. So if you had a $600,000 home, you only pay taxes on $550,000, but that was only for 1 year. It would have gone back up to $600,000 and the rate would have jumped. So that looming situation got Democrats and Republicans to work together over the long haul. In fact, adding a commission, a bipartisan commission to the special session was the idea of Senator Pelton, a Republican from Eastern Colorado. The Democrats, and I believe it was Senator Mullica, worked with him on that. And the commission was broadly representative, Jesse. I think they did a very good job. They had local government people. They had actually more Republicans than Democrats. Not that it matters, but they had unaffiliated. They had business representatives. They had everybody working hard towards the shared goal of reducing property taxes and providing homeowners assurance in the long term they wouldn't come up. So it wasn't clear that they would lead to an outcome that Republicans and Democrats would support. They worked, they met. The commission itself voted overwhelmingly to endorse a certain way of moving forward. And then from that base of work, legislators picked it up. Lisa Frizzell, who was on the commission, Senator Barb Kirkmeyer, those two happen to be Republicans, Senator Chris Hansen, who chaired the commission, Representative Chris DeGree Kennedy, and others sort of picked it up and said, let's get this across the finish line. I mean, doing nothing is not an answer. And they did. And to their great credit, they worked on the largest tax relief in the history of Colorado, $1.3 billion, not only allowing up to $70,000 to be reduced from the value of your home for taxation. Now it's 10%. So if it's a $500,000 home, it's $50,000. But if it's an $800,000 or $700,000 home, you reduce the value for taxation by $70,000, but also reduce the rate. And then capped at 5.5% growth, most property taxes going forward, meaning if God forbid there ever is another assessment period where it goes up 40%. And I don't think the one next year will be that way, Jesse. I don't think homes haven't gone up 40% in the last 2 years, but you always want to be future-proof. And so if that happens again, there'll be an automatic mechanism where homeowners won't feel the brunt of it. Now, second part of your question, do other people out there think property taxes should be higher, lower? I mean, I'm sure it's a great big state. I'm sure there's people who think that people should be paying more, and there's people that think they should be paying less. But the fact is, 57 out of 65 members of the state House, 33 out of 35 members of the state Senate, overwhelming majority, Republicans, Democrats, really doing the work that people sent them to Denver to do and creating a thoughtful way to keep property taxes low as well as provide our small businesses a lot of relief.
Okay, so I'll take that as a no to the special session. I mean, is there a better deal to be had? Obviously, the conservative groups want these ballot measures in November. It sounds like you feel like this is the best deal.
Well, look, I mean, in this kind of situation, it's not that the governor's office is not driving this. We're for, and we let, you know, early on legislators know, I mean, I'm for any tax relief they pass. And so if Democrats or Republicans, you know, have additional pieces to do, they can do them in January or I think that's the spirit everybody brings to it. I don't think Senator Hansen and Senator Kirkmeyer think that, oh, property taxes we're never talking about again. I think everybody believes there's more work to do. And I am very supportive of what they can agree on and do and whatever that is. And so, you know, if it saves people money. You've heard me say that number various, save people money on healthcare, save people money on housing, save people money on taxes. I mean, wherever it is. And I, by the way, view property taxes as part of that housing equation. We're going to get into housing, I'm sure. And it's certainly not the main driver of housing costs in Colorado, to be clear. And I think anybody who says that property taxes are the main reason homes cost too much, not true, but they are a driver, absolutely. And so we need to address all drivers of why it costs too much to live in Colorado. Property taxes is one of those. And of course, I celebrate the bipartisan progress the legislature made. And we welcome additional work in this issue in the years ahead.
To be fair, I mean, the legislature can call itself into a special session, but you also have that power. But I do want to move on to one last question.
Well, no, if they agree on something and come to me and Barb Kirkmeyer and Chris Hansen are saying, you know, we want to do it now instead of January for some reason, of course, we're open to that. They, you know, their caucuses have to be with them and so forth. But, you know, again, I would hope we can get back to it in January. But if there's a reason or a desire among legislators to do more work on it, we're, as governor, we're always happy to support that work.
Okay. Moving on to housing, as you talked about, more specifically housing land use. That was the way, you know, you're really trying to boost affordable housing in Colorado and make our air cleaner and improve the environment across the state. The legislature passed about 6 bills in this area this year, but they were all pretty limited in scope. They applied to metropolitan areas around transit stops. I wonder if you think in future years the legislature should try to broaden them, right? Obviously, not every part of Colorado has bus and rail, but every part of Colorado there could be ADUs, every part of Colorado there could be parking mandates. Is there room for all of these to be expanded?
So two things. First of all, I personally support these measures being applied to address the housing crisis across our state. Now, I want to push back a little when you said they don't apply to much of the state. That may be what it looks like geographically. But for instance, something like eliminating parking requirements, I read that that's about 70% of the population of the state, something like that, or maybe 70% of the population of the Front Range that applies to, because it's people who live near a bus or bus stop or rail stop within half a mile. And the majority of the Front Range residents do. So ADUs, most of our state, not geographically, because again, most of our city is empty geographically, it's mountains, but by population, most cities, the Denver metro area, Colorado Springs metro area, accessory dwelling units. So absolutely, it's more than material in addressing the housing issue. And at the same time, you're correct, it doesn't necessarily affect the, depending on which bill it is, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40% of the state. But they are very material. They address the housing, highest cost housing areas around Denver, around Colorado Springs, Pueblo, and they're a big part of the solution. And again, I support expanding them, and I know many members of the legislature do as well.
One of the things that the press corps was really scratching its head about was, you know, yes, these apply to the Denver metro area and Grand Junction, but in one case, the Roaring Fork Valley, when you're talking about the transit-oriented communities bill, but mountain communities, Summit County, Steamboat, Durango, were basically left out of these. And I wonder, you know, if land use isn't the solution there, what is? And if you can maybe talk about why these communities were left out of these measures. Was it politics? What happened there?
Well, again, I start by saying, of course, I personally support including solutions like accessory dwelling units by right in mountain communities. Absolutely. And I would add that there are many mountain communities are leading the way. I was with the mayor of Steamboat Springs, and he has an ADU in his own house that he rents out, and they have a big initiative to try to get them built across town. One reason that the state can be helpful, even in a very pro-ADU jurisdiction, is the local jurisdictions can't overcome HOAs that by covenant prohibit accessory dwelling units, whereas the state can, because HOAs are, of course, a product of state statutes. So one tool that the state can provide, and again, I have to go back and look at the bills, Jesse, I believe these communities can opt in to these bills. We hope they do. And in doing so, we would hope that then they can make sure that homeowners that live in HOAs can, in fact, build accessory dwelling units. HOAs are very substantial in our state. About 40% of the homes are members of a homeowners association. And they have their very important role. And as I like to say, they can determine, you know, your accessory dwelling unit has to be, you know, one of three colors. You might have to have a certain window dressing, but they can't say you can't build it. And I think that's important as we look statewide towards housing solutions.
I have a partial ADU in my backyard, so I'm looking forward to expanding that. I do want to nail down, though, on the mountain communities, right? I mean, there was a conscious decision not to include them. Yes, they can opt in, but was it political pressure from those communities that made you decide that they shouldn't be part of this? I mean, was it unbiased?
Well, it wasn't something I decided, Jesse. It's something the legislature decided. You can certainly ask them about the pros and the cons. Again, my position is I would love to include them. We have an acute housing crisis in mountain communities. I would say, you know, we made a lot of progress on the population and housing centers and job centers of the state, some progress in the mountain areas, and we welcome that conversation with more areas. I think it's fair to say the mountain areas are different. One of the areas they're different is there are even more constrained for land than Denver, Aurora, our cities are. What does that mean? Most of the land is public land, is federal land, in fact, in and around our towns. And I think we have some very creative cities and counties that understand the issue. I also want to mention that our mountain rail, which we passed the Senator Dylan Roberts carried a tax credit, and then it's one of the things that's funded from the two bills that fund rail, the rental car fee and the oil and gas agreement. Mountain Rail is not only, which it is, Denver Metro residents' access to Winter Park and Steamboat. It's also workers that can afford to live in communities like Craig and Hayden, which are phasing out of coal, would be able to get to job centers like Steamboat easier, quicker, not have to worry about severe winter conditions. And so it's also a solution for helping the needs of communities like Steamboat Springs.
Sorry for moving. I had the sun in my eyes, and I realized I looked like I was white as a ghost, but I didn't want people to run here thinking I was going to pass out. So I'm going to move on to construction defects. It's another housing issue that came up at the legislature this year. There was a bipartisan reform bill that was brought, but you didn't really take much of a lead in it. I don't think there was a press event. I don't think you formally endorsed the bill. I wonder why you kind of kept that at arm's length, whereas you were more vocal in support of some of these other housing measures.
Well, I pushed back a little on that, Jesse. I called for construction defects reform in my state of the state, and absolutely we supported the bill. You might be right. I didn't have a press conference, but I don't think I did on, you'd have to check on many of the housing bills. I called for them in the state of the state. It was clear we were supporting it, and it did get through the Senate, and that was good news. But look, I don't think you're going to see that everything, the legislature is going to just roll through, you know, going to fold and say we're done with housing. These are all foundations to build on. And the work around parking requirements and accessory dwelling units, absolutely meeting the needs of our mountain communities, meeting the needs of our Denver metro area. Construction defects reform is critical. These are all pieces. And I think we broke through this sort of large roadblock on housing that had paralyzed the state, and we're now moving forward in a big way. And every single element of this, including construction defects, are ways to build on in the future. And we're happy to continue to support that work.
I wonder, you know, there's no secret that you're a very hands-on governor when it comes to the legislative process. And I wonder, you know, if we can expect you to be more out front on this issue, on construction defects next year or whenever the next bill comes up. And I wonder, you know, if, you know, you brokered all these compromises this year, why didn't one happen on this?
Yeah, it would have been nice to make progress on construction defects. It'll also be nice to make progress next year. I think the land use piece was more important, because no matter what you do with construction defects, if you don't get permission to build, you know, 40 or 50 or 60 units, it doesn't matter whether it's an apartment or condo, because you can't even build it. So we wanted to break through the ability to build multifamily housing near transit, which we did. Now that it's allowed to be built, do we care about the mix between apartments and condos? And is the mix right now skewed towards rental apartments rather than condos? Yes. Do we encourage home ownership? Do we want condo ownership? Yes. Do we want to reduce costs for homeowners? Absolutely. So, I mean, the two naturally segue from one to the next, and absolutely there's additional work to do next year. And again, I was very happy that a bill passed the Senate. I did call for that in my state of the state, and I haven't written my next one for January, Jesse, but I think you can place a relatively safe bet. It'll include another call to do work in that area.
All right. I kind of mentioned the deals that were brokered by your office and lawmakers, and I wanted to talk a little bit about those. There were ones on oil and gas, environment, property taxes, lawsuit caps, kind of ran the gamut this year. I wonder, though, if this is really the most transparent way of doing things, rolling out these prepackaged, predetermined agreements, you know, a week or so before the session, and seems to limit public input and scrutiny until it's too late. So, I mean, how do you bring the public in? And I wonder if how you would respond to that criticism.
Yeah, so, you know, in cases of these major agreements, we were in many ways trusted intermediaries between warring parties or factions that had vastly different views of the world. Let's take the doctors and hospitals and trial lawyers, right? Both have valid arguments, and, you know, we're generally a little bit more on the hospital side, but trusted by both, and we certainly agree that, you know, medical malpractice hadn't been increased in however many years and probably needed to be updated, just so people who were disabled by, you know, a malpractice would be able to support themselves. So some truth on both sides. But the important thing is the initiative, which was not controlled by the legislature, not controlled by us, had to be removed, or the proponents had to decide to roll the dice in November. There's always a high risk when you roll the dice. You never know what the voters of Colorado are going to do. And I think that's the reason they were at the table and ultimately forged an agreement with people on the other side of that issue. The legislative champions on both sides were certainly in the mix. And it wasn't really for, you know, us in that the legislature or governor weren't the ones who could say, you know, this is what you need to withdraw and not roll the dice in November, which was what very bad initially, by the way, no caps. I would have opposed that. I made that very clear. But that doesn't mean it wouldn't have passed. I don't know what would have happened. And I told both sides that, right? I mean, who knows? So again, it was an agreement where both sides could live with. And then the legislature, I think, reacted probably the same way I did. And they're very happy to see a reasonable, thoughtful agreement reached rather than an extreme risk at the ballot box that probably made people very uncomfortable. I mean, especially in healthcare, but I'm sure it made those who were injured by medical malpractice, worry too, because they didn't know it would pass.
But is there enough public input, I guess, in this process, right? I'd heard, at least for the oil and gas deal, that it was like a CEO to governor type of discussion, right? Those are calls that the public be a part of.
I would say that, you know, there were a number of great grassroots environmental organizations at the table: Earth Guardians, Green Latinos, Conservation Colorado, so many great groups that were at the table. Of course, on the other side, yes, they're companies. That's who extracts oil and gas. It's not a very grassroots activity. I mean, you know, there's mineral rights owners who are people who make money from it, but it's fundamentally done by companies. And again, in this case, Jesse, both sides had filed initiatives. I thought both sides had filed initiative that personally, as a voter, I probably would have voted against. I think that both sides, unfiltered, had ideas that were not good for the state. But both sides also understood, Jesse, that their initiatives might not pass and the other sides might. And that was a huge risk. And that is, again, what brought people to the table to work on a better path forward with the legislative champions of clean air, where what could we actually do on clean air? How could we support a economy-wide reduction in carbon, meaning funding transit, you know, which helps people get where they want to go with lower carbon utilization, decreases the cost of living, affecting ecosystems and protecting outdoor areas from impacts from oil and gas, which this also funds through Colorado Parks and Wildlife. Working with the legislators, working with the proponents on both sides, they were able to reach an agreement to pull down their ballot initiatives and pursue a better path for the state. And I think both sides agreed a better path for them as well.
All right. Well, you always say that you don't look at the ballot measures before they end up on your ballot.
I don't.
There were two. I caught you, and there were two that you might have known a little bit about.
I was clear. I think even I had been asked by the press. I said it would be good to avoid this, and I'm not personally supportive of removing all caps on medical malpractice. And so, you know, I'd said that. But I honestly don't read them all, Jesse, until I know what's on the ballot. And that's just true, because I have plenty to read. I'm reading, I think, 300 bills right now to decide which ones to sign. And I'm sure I'll sign the vast majority of them.
All right. I'm going to keep asking you about the ballot measures, though. I'm not going to back off on
that. Well, it's a good topic for a show in like September, for sure.
All right. I'll remember that. Okay. So we got about 5-6 minutes left, and I want to hit a few more subjects. So looking forward, you had a real ally in the state Senate and Senate President Steve Fenberg. He's now leaving. He's term limited. And I wonder if you're worried about that making it harder for you to, you know, have the influence that you've had over the legislature in recent years. Are you going to have some other allies? Do you feel like it's going to be harder for you to shape legislation without having somebody, you know, so in your corner in such a top position?
Well, first of all, immense gratitude for Senator Fenberg for his great service. He's somebody I've known a long time. He happens to be my state senator. Even a governor gets a state senator. So he has really done a remarkable job for the state of Colorado. So appreciative of his work. I think we have good relationships with many members of both, you know, Democrats and Republicans in the state legislature. I meet regularly with Democratic leadership and Republican leadership. So whoever is in leadership, we're going to establish a strong relationship with. I've known, you know, Speaker McCluskey a number of years from her work on the school district days, and have gotten to know Monica Duran, and of course Robert Rodriguez. I've known his father many years, and him to a lesser extent. So we're going to work with whoever both sides elect as leaders, and we're very happy to do that, and grateful for Senator Fenberg's service.
All right, I want to go back to one of the deals that came out, and a question of that. One of the provisions in one of the oil and gas deals, the fee bill, I believe it was the fee bill, included a provision in it that required RTD to focus its efforts on completing the rail line up to Adams County and then the rail line up to Longmont. And I wonder, though, how you actually plan to enforce that, or if it's more of like a bully pulpit kind of thing.
Well, I mean, RTD is a construct of the state. Obviously, the state is what gives RTD its authority. There's discussions about how to change that or modify that. Obviously, these funds need to be used to complete projects. That project that was supposed to be completed, I think, in 2017 with regard to Northwest Rail still is now 7 years behind schedule. And this additional resources for that should help expand RTD service, not just be used to fill holes elsewhere.
But how do you hold their feet to the fire on that? I mean, it's in statute now that they have to prioritize it, but I didn't see like an enforcement mechanism.
Well, it's the law of Colorado, Jesse. The law of Colorado has to be followed. And as I said, what our RTD is a construct of the state. And of course, I think you're going to continue to see a desire among legislators for more accountability for any funds that they give to transit agencies like RTD to make sure that it goes to expanding services for more people.
So the RTD reform bill was something that died in the final days of the legislature. You were often mentioned in that. I wonder if you support that measure coming back next year, and if you think that the board should be shrunk and give yourself some power to appoint members of the RTD board.
Yeah, look, we need every transit agency in the state, but in particular RTD, it's the biggest transit agency in the state. We need to be best of breed, one of the top 10 transit agencies in the country. And sadly, we are not. And yes, that is partially through a very convoluted governance structure that, again, based on objective data from others, is simply not a governance structure that sets them up for success. The state needs RTD to be successful. We are going to step up as funding partners. We need to make sure that they can achieve operational excellence and are one of the best transit agencies in the country.
All right, so in the couple of minutes we have left, I'm going to ask a couple of forward-looking questions. The EPA has rejected your latest effort to stop the agency from requiring that reformulated gas be sold kind of in the Denver metro area, I-25 corridor, basically to Wyoming during summer months. I wonder if there's a next step to your protest or if we're just stuck with paying more for gas now.
So, well, I'm very upset that they didn't approve it. They also actually didn't reject it. They are holding it. Which means that if there's a supply crisis, which our external analysis that we contracted for shows is very likely, they would presumably grant it. But in that case, it's a dollar late and a dime short. They should grant that now. Absent that, this will affect our state through, I believe, September 1st. I'd have to check on the date that it rolls off for summer. And with very unfortunate consequences, including the fact that people will simply drive a little further to get much lower cost gas, because this is only part of our state. You can go north of Fort Collins, you can go near Greeley, you could go in Colorado Springs. And if there is a major cost differential of, you know, 50 cents.
Well, looks like we might have lost the governor here in the final minute, so.
We got it working.
All right, Jeff. All right.
What I would say is people will drive, you know, depending on where they live. If there's a major differential, it means worse air quality, more miles traveled. You probably saw the letter I wrote, and I'm very upset. And they just, we give them every legal, every legal way of simply saying you have a 22-day or 1 year abeyance, and they didn't do it, unfortunately. So it is what it is.
All right, well, let me ask you one last question since I think you were trying to leave since you didn't want to answer my last tough question. I wonder how you're feeling about Joe Biden. It's a presidential election year. Some recent polls have raised red flags in swing states across the country. I wonder what advice you might have for the president in terms of how to win this thing. And, you know, if you're feeling nervous about his chances in November.
Well, I feel confident for Joe Biden in Colorado. I think he's done a lot of great things as president. We're particularly appreciative of the Bipartisan Infrastructure Act, long, elusive, bringing Republicans and Democrats together around a major infrastructure package. Grateful for the assistance to states that we've been able to do some very creative things with here. I would encourage him to talk about the future. When I've run for office, I never talk about what I did. I talk about what I want to do in a vision. So, I mean, when I was running for governor the first time, I didn't talk at all about what I did in Congress. In fact, I didn't even mention I was a congressperson. The people in my district probably knew it, but in part because Congress isn't that popular. It's even less popular now than when I was in it. But in large part because I wanted to focus on the future. And I said, here's what I want to do. 100% renewable energy by 2040, saving people money on health care, cutting the income tax, renewable energy economy, and free preschool and kindergarten, right? And we've stuck to those things. We're doing them. And do we take a little victory? Like, hey, we got preschool and kindergarten done. I'll say that, but I'm always focused on the future. We were talking about housing, right? I mean, this session, and we're going to continue that, but we immediately pivoted to what the greatest need of the state was, and we're continuing that. So talk about the future. Excite people about your vision for the future. I think that if President Biden does that well, I think he'll be elected for another term.
All right. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you jumping back on for that last question. And you can't see our audience, neither can I, but I'm sure there's a standing ovation for us. But I appreciate your time, Governor, and look forward to chatting with you again soon.
Thank you, Jesse. Take care.
Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. The extended closure of a key mountain pass in Colorado is set to scramble Memorial Day travel plans, forcing some drivers on lengthy reroutes. Independence Pass, connecting Aspen to Twin Lakes, will remain closed through the holiday weekend, with a tentative reopening planned for June 1st. The Colorado Department of Transportation said the pass usually closes for winter in early November and almost always opens before Memorial Day. The last time the road wasn't opened by Memorial Day was in 2020, and several counties requested it stay closed to limit travel during the COVID-19 pandemic. Nearly 1,100 people died of fentanyl overdoses in Colorado last year, an 18% increase from a year earlier. Preliminary data from the Center for Health and Environmental Data shows a surge that started 5 years ago has continued, with deaths increasing more than 900% since 2018. Denver recorded more deaths than any other county with 321, followed by Adams, Arapahoe, Jefferson, and El Paso counties. The Drug Enforcement Administration says seizures of fentanyl have also spiked. In 2023, the agency confiscated a record 2.6 million pills in Colorado, up from 1.9 million in 2022 and 565,200 in 2021. A 34-year-old Wyoming man with a passion for riding and photographing ski lifts is one stop away from completing a long-term goal of visiting lifts at all 750 ski areas in the U.S. and Canada. Sometime this month, Peter Landsman plans to head to Moose Mountain in Canada's Yukon Territory to check the last ski area from his list. Landsman's liftblog.com database now includes photos and detailed histories of all the chairlifts at all 750 resorts. This season, he scoured the remotest corners of Canada and visited 61 of the 62 new chairlifts installed in the U.S. in the last year. For more information on all of these stories, visit our website, coloradosun.com. And don't forget to tune in again next time. Now, a quick message from our team.
Hi, I'm Tamara Chung, and I write about business and technology for the Colorado Sun. A large part of my beat is the Colorado economy and covering the ups and downs of losing a job, finding a job, running a business, all that fun stuff. You'll find coverage every Saturday in What's Working, and it's free because we feel all Coloradans need to know this stuff in order to stay better informed. That's how we roll here, by the way. And that's why we'd appreciate your support to help keep the Colorado Sun sustainable. If you'd like to become a member, you can just go to coloradosun.com/join today. Thanks.